clearly as I can, that I would operate from in attempting to develop an alternative psychology. All these sections in here are kind of basic or foundational assumptions. And when the other material that I want to present, including what I've already done with regard to dreams, for that to be criticized ultimately means to come back and challenge these assumptions. And I'm trying to express and articulate both for myself and for others as much as I can of what those basic assumptions are. So what I just did with that thing about the search for direction in the movement of life and the relationship to Freud and Freudian terminology and so on is an instance of that sort of thing. The next couple of sections I can do very quickly on B and C because, again, it's kind of incorporating things that I've already said into that list of assumptions. And what I want to make sure of, and that's why I have this dramatic intersubjectivity down here, I want to make it as clear as I can, or as Richard Nixon would say, I want to make it perfectly clear. The primordial immediacy or primary process or search for direction that I've been talking about is not the experience of a monad, of an isolated individual, but is an experience that is conducted in the context of our intersubjective relationships with others. The problems that we need to deal with and the healing that we need in order to be able to deal with them are mediated by others, are mediated through the human community in the context of our dramatic relationships with others. And our search for direction in the movement of life is conducted within the dramatic context of those intersubjective relationships. I don't search for direction all by myself. Many of the problems that I need to resolve in finding direction and, as I say, a lot of the aid, healing that comes to me to help me deal with those are mediated through the intersubjective context of our lives. But even beyond that, today, I think we are becoming increasingly aware of how these intersubjective relationships, how our dramatic subjectivity is itself influenced and sometimes even determined by factors that lie beyond our immediate experience of other persons. For instance, structural factors, economic and political makeup. And as we're discovering that, as we're discovering that that intersubjective context is determined by factors that lie beyond our immediate experience of intersubjective relationships with others, by economic and political constructs, structures, so too we're becoming aware that our search for direction imposes a responsibility of changing structures. Of changing social, political, and economic structures. As our awareness, in other words, you know, as our awareness of the factors that are involved develops to include, for instance, those structures that lie beyond our immediate experience of intersubjectivity with others, so too the search for direction imposes on us dealing with those problems, dealing with the problems that set the context of our intersubjectivity. In other words, one of the things that I'm trying to do in developing an alternative psychology is to state its social responsibilities. It imposes upon us the social responsibility of effecting transformations in the structures that set up the intersubjective context of our lives. And once that responsibility becomes imposed upon our consciousness, we become aware of it. Well, I think we can also say quite literally that we do not find direction in the movement of life except to the extent that we take up the challenge of the transformation of those structural and economic factors. A psychology today, contemporary psychology, that would enable human beings to find direction in the movement of life would enable human beings to contribute to the transformation of the social and economic structures that keep people from finding direction in the movement of life. See the thing that I'm trying to do here? Social and economic structures prevent the fulfillment of the human drama. They prevent people from finding direction in the movement of life. Okay. One who is on the way toward and who is, you know, discovering direction in the movement of life is in that process going to be contributing to the transformation of structures that inhibit that process. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Our own search for direction is not isolated and individual. It is, first of all, intersubjective, but it is also socio-historical. At this point that I'm emphasizing right now, where we get brought up short so often, how are we to assume this responsibility? How are we to say, I will not in fact be finding direction in the movement of life if I don't eventually, sooner or later, at the appropriate point, begin to take that question serious about the structural setup that we're engaged in. I think this is a part of this whole axial shift that I believe we're engaged in today. It's a part of the axial shift in cultural orientation. And I think it can't be shirked. That question cannot be shirked by a community that would contribute at least to freeing humanity for the pursuit of the human quest or the direction. And then number C there, complexes and dreams. The figures of your dreams are representatives of your own psychic complexes. When your father appears in your dream, most often it doesn't refer to him. It refers to what your father has done in your own psyche and to your own psyche. It's the complex in your own psyche that's wrapped up with your father. That's not always the case. Because, as I said in the last class, not all dreams are symbolic. Some of them are much more literal. A person could have a dream of her father dying, and it may indicate that her father is dying. But it may also indicate that something connected with the father complex in herself is dying. And more often than not, it will have that second. So that the figures that appear in the dream are more often than not your own psychic complexes. And those figures then reflect how a person effectively participates in the search for direction and the movement of life. What's inhibiting me from finding direction and the movement of life? Well, it may very well be the father complex. So the dream will show how it is, or the succession of dreams over 6 months in which your father appears will show how that complex is either being transformed or stuck. And if it's being transformed, your own experience will indicate that what used to be an obstacle is no longer an obstacle, or it's becoming less of an obstacle. Again, possibly this should have been put under B, but anyway, indicated here. That the context within which this whole process goes on is today becoming not only increasingly concerned with structural realities, but also it's becoming increasingly global. The socio-historical context within which individuals seek for and find direction is becoming an increasingly global socio-historical context. And again, I don't believe that it is arbitrary or accidental that just as we are finding the context of our lives to be global, Jung makes the discovery of globally significant symbols. I don't think that is arbitrary and accidental. that as a problem that we need to deal with, if humanity is to have a human future, is being revealed as a global problem that influences all of the interconnections on the face of the earth. Right at that point in human history, globally meaningful symbols are being discovered again, or are being disengaged by the science of humanity. The archetypal, and I would add anagogic symbols, that express our human community with one another. And I go into this in a lot of detail in the religion and culture course, but just wanted to place this thing in that kind of context. There's a dream that a Jungian analyst by the name of Max Zeller experienced in 1948. Zeller is an analyst, I believe he's still alive, practicing in Los Angeles. He was a young analyst in 48, he's an old analyst now, and he went to Zurich in the summer of 1948 to try to settle an identity problem, a problem of professional identity for himself that was becoming increasingly difficult. And the question was, what in the world am I doing as a Jungian analyst? What is the significance of what I'm doing? And he had the summer free in 48, and he figured, well, let's go over and spend some time around Jung. Maybe he can give me an answer to what I'm doing. Now, what the man is searching for is his own identity, how he is to understand what he's doing in his profession. And Jung tried to give him various factors and advice and so on and so forth, but it wasn't making the kind of click, connection, that was psychologically necessary for him at that point. You know, you can come to me and say, what am I doing as a preacher? And I can give you the whole theology of preaching, but it's not answering your question. Because you want some kind of connection that is other than that. And Jung was giving him this whole theory of what he was doing. It wasn't answering the unique individual professional question. And he came to the end of the summer and realized he had to go home and figures, well, I'm not going to get my answer yet. And two nights before he's leaving Zurich, he has this dream in which a gigantic temple is being built. And the foundations of the temple are already laid, and the structure of the temple is just beginning to be erected. And there are people participating in the building of the temple that come from every corner of the globe. There are scores of people there, but they're from all the continents on the face of the earth, and they are all building this temple. And he himself is participating in building the temple, bringing his own stone, his own brick, to the building of the temple. And the cross-cultural significance of the thing was the thing that was most significant to him. And he brought that dream to Jung, and he knew already, but Jung says, there's the answer to your question. What you're doing as a Jungian analyst is helping to disengage the cross-cultural constituents of humanity, and in doing that, helping to build a new place where God and humanity can dwell together. And the cross-cultural thing is almost like reversing the myth of the Tower of Babel, where the people who are divided by language, find a unity that goes much deeper than language in the archetypal symbols that we share in common. But if we can pursue this kind of quest in a way, you know, under the grace of God, that the separation and division of humanity is one of the ways towards mitigating that. Let's not get utopian about it. It's not like we're going to end up with a classless society. Any of those myths of, you know, the kingdom of God in imminent history. If we do that, we're going down the wrong, barking up the wrong tree. But the possibilities for a healing of the global human situation that are present in the discoveries of modern depth psychology, I think are mammoth. And I think this dream is an indication of that kind of thing. You see now what a dream like that does for the person who dreams it is it gives his life historical significance on a grand scale. And there are certain symbols that are able to do that sort of thing. Your life is placed, I've really got a place in the cosmos, in that sense, you know. I'm this little atom in the midst of the whole cosmos, but by God, there's a place for me, and it's really meaningful, it's really significant. Okay. And the upshot of that whole thing is that the help that that psychology and psychiatry can offer to the individual by way of enabling self-knowledge and self-appropriation has a communal and historical significance to it. And psychology will continue to run into dead ends until it is placed within the global and structural contexts that are setting the problems that we're trying to deal with. It will continue to run into a dead end. Therapy is not an end in itself. And I even think that psychotherapy is a transitional phenomenon as a profession. The knowledge that is currently being used in the professional context is meant to get out more into the public. And therapy itself is not an end in itself. The therapeutic culture, what Lash calls the therapeutic culture, is a culture of narcissism. I said this the last class, but within this context, the significance of this whole thing is historical. All right. The next section I call the dialectic of the subject and dialectic of history. I'm not going to go into those relationships so much as to comment on the significance of all of this in the context of what I've just said. That point A there, the soul is the measure of society. In wrapping up this whole discussion that has come up in one way or another today, the relationship of the individual and society, the relationship of the individual and history, and economic transformation and global transformation and so on, I want to call attention to what I think is a crucial insight in human history, an insight that appears with unmistakable clarity at the origins of Western civilization, but that I believe has been progressively neglected in the course of modern historical experience, or what Lonergan calls the longer cycle of decline that we are engaged in at the present time. By the way, with that whole thing of the longer cycle of decline, the two competing totalitarianisms of the multinational corporations and the Soviet bureaucracies is really the last point, unless the thing totally collapses by way of their conflict, in the longer cycle of decline. We're at that point at the present time. But anyway, the insight that I'm trying to get at, which is too often overlooked in the theologies, for instance, of liberation, but that this whole discussion that we're having can bring to the theologies, is the insight that the integrity of a society is dependent upon the integrity of the people who make it up. The integrity of the society and the social order is dependent upon the integrity of the people who compose that society. Plato expressed that insight by saying the soul is the measure of society. The integrity, he meant by that, the integrity of the individual, the integrity of human interiority, is the measure of the integrity of the society. And that no renewal of society in the interests of justice and a new humanity can dispense from the interior journey that we're beginning to learn about through the insights of depth psychology, spiritual theology, intellectual and psychic conversion. This is a necessary step in the renovation and transformation of the social order. The one essential key, one of the essential keys to the betterment of the historical process, lies in resolving and healing the dialectic conflict within ourselves. Pedro Arupe has a book called A Planet to Heal. It starts at home. And it has planetary ramifications. But if it doesn't start at home, it doesn't start anywhere. I'm absolutely convinced of this. And the means that lead to the resolution of the dialectic are important, and they're too often overlooked when we talk about the transformation of social structures. Contemplation, solitude, learning, understanding, interior journey, those are not apolitical. They are not without political significance. And they're too often ridiculed in the theologies that would want to talk about a renovation of the political order. They're too often relegated to subordinate or even neglected status in those theologies. And I'm absolutely convinced that contemplation is not apolitical. Solitude is not. Disinterested passion for the truth, learning, the interior journey that we're talking about through the symbolic world, those are not without social, historical significance of great meaning. Now, there is a danger connected with everything that we're talking about here that one could isolate oneself from the social dialectic. And to that extent, I think we need to heed the warnings of Marxists and liberation theologians and so on. But I would counter those warnings by saying, yes, but I cannot disregard these values if I hope to make some contribution to the process of reversing the decline in history that you are so concerned about. Again, another instance of it would be various renewals within the church. Charismatic, for instance, that are frequently called asocial and apolitical. That's a danger. It's not an intrinsic constituent of those movements. They need not be. And in fact, a lot of what is going on there is important and essential for the transformation of the social order. It's a danger that those movements have to face, and they need to face them if they're going to be responsible. But it's not intrinsic to those movements that they be that way. The heart of what I'm trying to say is perhaps can be gotten at also by discussing the levels of value. Monaghan talks about a scale of values where the hierarchy of values is determined by the degree of self-transcendence to which values call us. The highest values are religious, the ones that call us to reality that is beyond the cosmos, and to a relationship of intimacy with that reality. And those values determine what he calls personal values, that is to say, human authenticity. Sustained authenticity is impossible without religious love. It may not be recognized as religious love by the person to whom it is being given. And there's a lot more sustained authenticity in a lot of atheists than there is in a lot of professing believers. But the gift is present there. And the sustained authenticity of those persons would be impossible, I'm convinced, without that gift. Personal values are the condition for cultural values. Here you're getting at the soul as the measure of society. I'm beginning to get at it here. The values that are operative in a culture will be genuine values to the extent that they are values that are promulgated by authentic human subjects. To the extent that they are not, they will be distorted, and they will distort further development within that culture. And those cultural values, art, literature, music, meaning, philosophy, have an intrinsic bearing on the social order itself. Kant says that unless the philosophers in a society are free, nobody in that society is free. If human beings are not free to pursue meaning for its own sake, which is what philosophers do, if they're doing genuine philosophy. That human beings are not free for that pursuit and free to promulgate that pursuit. Nobody in the society is free, and the social order is the possibility of a just social order is excluded from the beginning. Totalitarianism sets in without that kind of free pursuit of artistic and intellectual value. And the value that the social order conditions the distribution of particular values. The justice of the social order conditions the distribution of particular values. The food and clothing and housing, education and so on and so forth is conditioned by the justice and integrity of the social order. And it moves in this direction. We'll see later that if the soul is the measure of society, if personal authenticity is the measure of these values, Plato also says God is the measure of the soul. But religious values are determinative of personal authenticity. All right, we'll move now to number 6, psyche and spirit, and this is new material rather than simply trying to formalize and systematize some things that I've said before. Are there any questions in this? John?
Just to kind of you did, when you're talking about dramatic and intersubjectivity, what does it mean? Use this natural dramatic relationships. It came up very frequently in that.
The drama nuance there is that our I'm taking this out of the chapter 6 of Insight, where Lonergan speaks of the dramatic pattern of experience. There are different patterns of experience. Biological pattern of experience, intellectual pattern of experience, where I'm seeking for theoretical intelligibility, and my experience is patterned to lead me to that. Aesthetic pattern of experience, where the sensitivity is liberated for the appreciation of beauty. And then the dramatic pattern of experience, it's a term that he gives. So the pattern of experience that we're engaged in most of the time, namely our normal intersubjective relations with each other, they are dramatic, not in the sense that they're always filled with drama, but in the sense that the story of our lives is conditioned and set and lived out in the context of our intersubjective relationships. That the main elements of the story take place within that relationship. So by dramatic, I don't mean, you know, fraught with emotion all the time or anything like that. But rather, we are, in a sense, actors in a story.